Too soon I was unloaded, and I had to run the gamut of whistles in the big room again. This may be a mission field, Lord, I thought as I took the receipt for the boxes to the timekeeper's window in the centre of the room. But it's not mine. I'll never learn to talk to these girls. They'd take anything I said and twist it around until... I stopped. For smiling at me through the glass partition of the timekeeper's booth were the warmest eyes I had ever seen. They were brown. No, they were green, and she was very young. Blonde, slender, she couldn't have been out of her teens, and she was handling the most responsible job on the floor, the work orders and finished work receipts. As I handed mine through the window, her smile broke into a laugh. "Don't mind them," she said gently. "This is the treatment they give every newcomer. In a day or two, it'll be someone else." My heart flooded with gratitude. She handed me a new shipping order from the pile in front of her, but still I stood there staring at her. In a room where the rest of the women wore enough powder and rouge to make up a circus, here was a girl without a trace of makeup. Only her own fresh young colouring set off those eyes that were never the same shade twice. The more I looked at her, the more I was sure I had seen her before. But the question would sound like a cliché. Reluctantly, I went back to the assembly line. The hours seemed to drag. By the end of the long day on my feet, every step on my ankle was agony. Try as I would, I began to limp. Grietje spotted it at once.
"What's the matter, Andy?" she shrieked. "You fall out of bed?"
"East Indies," I said, hoping to shut her up. Grietje's yelp of triumph could be heard all over the room.
"We got a war hero, girls. Is it true what they say about Sukarno, Andy? Does he like them very young?"
It was the worst mistake I could have made. For days, long after I would have lost the value of novelty for them, the girls questioned me about what they imagined to be the exotic life of the East. More than once I would have quit the job in sheer boredom at their one-track conversation, except for the smiling eyes behind the glass partition. I took to going there even when I had no receipt to deliver. Sometimes, along with a receipt, I'd slip a note of my own. "You're looking very nice today." Or, "Half an hour ago you frowned. What was the matter?" I kept wondering how she felt about the talk she overheard, and what she was doing in a place like this anyhow. And always I was haunted by the feeling that I knew her. I worked at the factory a month before I got up courage to tell her, "I'm worried about you. You're too young and too pretty to be working with this crowd." The girl threw back her head and laughed. "Why, Grandpa," she said, "what old-fashioned ideas you have." "Actually," she leaned close to the little window, "they're not a bad crowd. Most of them just need friends, and they don't know any other way to get them." She looked at me as though wondering whether to confide in me. "You see," she said softly, "I'm a Christian. That's why I came to work here."